lot of dysfunction in my family. Thank you. I had a lot of dysfunction in my family, and I was just having a chit-chat over here earlier how coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, gain a sponsor, and starting to work the steps, I start working through that stuff that I wanted to forget, that stuff that happened when I was little. And not even knowing how this program's going to work, to me, I just wanted to stop doing what I was doing. I wanted to stop drinking. Drinking was my best friend. I mean, alcohol was my best friend until the bitch turned on me. She gave me the ovaries to say and do what I wanted to do. You know, I talked to dudes, I talked to guys, but I never talked to guys with the intention that they would want to be with me. I never saw myself at that level. I talked to those guys so I can talk. Hey, my friend right here. I was that person. I just wanted to go and have some drinks, relax, and dance. And I didn't even like dancing with guys because they all want to come. You know, they want to chit-chat. I'm like, get off my ass. You know, they're all right here being all, you know. And I'm just like, I just want to dance. I just want to be feel good, you know. I just let me stay out of my space. So I like to dance alone and drinking and just having a good time. And I just, that feeling that I started getting when I started drinking and enjoying the drinking was just that feeling. That feeling that I get when I go into a meeting room of Alcoholics Anonymous, in all honesty, because I could have a crazy day out there, but as soon as I get in the meeting, even when I'm like, I don't want to go, should I go? No, I could go tomorrow and do that little head thing. Well, if I leave now, or maybe I'll just wait. But when I end up getting there, I'm like so grateful that I went. Sometimes I don't walk away with a big waha moment, but some days I walk away with, damn, I'm so glad I didn't miss that meeting. I felt like it was just for me. That's not something I ever had before. I never had that kind of companionship or community or people who like cared. I didn't. And then, you know, what attracted me when I first came in was I'll tell you what didn't attract me when I first walked in. I walked in a serenity, or I like to say I shivered. I walked in like a little pinchy wet chihuahua, you know, not knowing if this was going to work, you know, that blue building on the corner and freaking shivering and just against the wall. What I noticed second was a room full of white people. And I share it because it's part of my story. I was the only Latina in there, and I'm like, fuck, they are not going to know anything about where I come from, you know. And I'm very honest in saying, you know, again, I came from a dysfunctional family. And so we always had cops at the house, probation officers. I was born and raised in Los Angeles in what I call the Mexican ghetto down there. East LA area over there. But, you know, the only, back then, I'm 60. So back then, the only white people were public, you know, probation officers, child welfare services, cops. They were all white. Now you got all kinds of colors. You know, police come in all kinds of colors now. But back then, it was a bunch of white people. And so that's how I grew up. You know, white people are, you know, they're bad. They're not good. My mom, who's, you know, my mom was damaged goods. You know, she was a raging alcoholic. But my mom had always told me, los Mexicanos no van a tener nada. Like, Mexicans won't have nothing. The white people have everything. You know, and that's how I grew up. And how can you not believe what you're being told on a regular daily basis? And part of that story is my mom always told me, bueno por mierda, which, you know, means good for shit. You know, my mom was very abusive verbally and mentally and emotionally. She was just my mom, like I said. My mom was a hot mess, and she had 9 of us. You know, and I remember somebody saying, God, if I had 9 kids, I'd drink too. But my mom had 9 of us. I'm number 8. And what's crazy is that none of the men stayed with my mom. So I don't know who my dad was, who my dad is. I just found out a few years ago through Ancestry.com. Turns out the loser was married and had 5 kids, and my mom was a mistress. And also turns out that all those times I was in a grocery store thinking, maybe I have family here. You know, I always had a feeling like there might be family around me, and I wouldn't know who they are. And I'd ask my mom questions about that man, and she'd like, no me andes chingando, déjeme en paz, which is don't fucking bug me, leave me alone. Like, she never wanted to talk about him, and I'm like, God, she must hate me because he did something to her, you know? Because my mom beat me on a regular, and I didn't understand why she beat me on a regular, and it didn't take anything for her to beat me, pull my hair, hit me with an extension cord. Curtain rods hurt, extension cords hurt. But wire hangers, no wire hangers, people, I'm telling you. The pinchy wire hangers hurt, they burn. But, you know, so I grew up in that kind of not being wanted, not feeling loved. What did I do wrong? You know, I was born. Maybe I wasn't supposed to be born, you know? And so I did find out who that dad was a few years ago, but he's passed. And I did get a hold of a stepbrother, my half-brother, and got him on the phone, and he's like, well, what do you want? And I said, I just want to know what he was like. And he said, I'll tell you now, He was our house was peaceful when he was gone, and he was an ass when he was home. I said, okay, thank you, and hung up. And I tell you that because truly and sincerely, AA had taught me from the get-go. I always thought, this man left me with a crazy woman. Why would he, again, I'm not good enough. Why would somebody leave me with a whack job? You know, he knew more about me than I knew about him, because the name he gave my mom wasn't even the real name. So now I could see, now in hindsight, I could see why my mom, I've made peace with my mom. My mom and I have a really good relationship. Again, she was extremely abusive, left us alone a lot. I was a latchkey kid. I went through foster home, you know, and my sister and I were sexually abused by our brothers. And my sister, what I feel, she got the worst end of it, because she actually got the men who came home with drunk with my mom would go after her. And so, I mean, for one person who's sexually and physically and mentally and emotionally abused, still think that I got the short end of the stick. My sister had it worse than I downplayed my trauma, you know. But in reality, you know, coming to AA and working the steps, I tell you, when I looked at that board and I'm like, why do we need to bring up old shit with number four? I didn't understand it. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous wanting to just put the past where it goes. For anybody who's new or fairly new, if you're in that position where you just want to forget what you did or what they did to you, there is truth. And when people tell you, your past will be your asset. It will be your asset. It doesn't make sense right now, but it will. And then what happens is, the more that I started talking about the stuff that was done to me or the stuff that I did, what I've come to realize was the more it lost its power over me. You know, I was taught really good with my mom in my whole childhood that you don't say what happens in the house. You don't tell nobody your shit. You know, you don't ask for help. And if you cry, I'll give you something more to cry about. You know, lovely. So, you know, that whole idea of sharing the shame and the guilt and the humiliation, for me, I tell you, people get scared when it comes to step four and five. And for me, it was the most liberating steps, because when I was able to put that stuff on paper. And I tell you, when I did, I don't know about you guys, but I've been in administrative work for most of my life. And so I did this Excel spreadsheet. And so I'm listing my list of everybody who wronged me, you know, and why they wronged me and how hurt I was. And I was across the street from Serenity at that little park with my sponsor at the time. And it was a pretty Excel spreadsheet. And she comes out with this red pen and jacked up my whole spreadsheet. She's like, nope, that doesn't count. Nope. What's your part right there? What? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, having to understand about having expectations of other people who are ill to make the right decisions, like my expectations of my brother who abused me, or my mom who, I don't know, her trauma, you know, I do believe in that hurt people, you know, hurt people, or if they don't know otherwise, or like I like to say, I didn't know that I didn't know that I didn't know, you know. And then, you know, and for me to be able to even say those things that just made me laugh inside is like, that's also liberating, because when I came in here and I started working the steps and I'm thinking, God, nobody ever, I felt I lived my life like somebody handed me the torch and said, here, don't fuck it up. Like, go on in life, make all the right decisions, don't mess it up. But nobody ever handed me a torch. I brought that upon myself. I took it as though I needed to do that. And that falls into that people-pleasing kind of thing that some people can identify with. You know, I grew up with wanting to keep my mom happy. Like, I didn't want her to come home drunk and to beat me or, you know, anything else to happen. And when she was sober, I used to notice that she'd have a couple of sips of her beer and she'd be happy for a couple of beers, and all of a sudden it'd go sideways and she'd get really violent. And I watched a lot of beatings go on in my house with, I don't know, that's probably why the men didn't stay. Because she'd hit them in the head with a stiletto high heel or telephone or hijo de la chingada at 2 o'clock in the morning. Gets really loud, you know, when people are fighting, alcohol, all drunk, fighting 2-3 in the morning. But my mom was a very violent woman. And my brothers, who were gangbangers at that time, their friends would look the other way when my mom was around. Like, she was just brutal. It's funny because I came across an old picture and I remember my ex-husband telling me, God, even when your mom was young, she still had that te voy a chingar look on her face, which means I'm going to fuck you up look on her face. It's all hard in her picture, you know? And I'm like, gosh, it's like she always wanted to be scary. Like, what I learned is, like, I had that same kind of thing. Like, I had this facade, like the outer thing, you know, I want to look like I'm not hurt. I want to look like I'm okay. I want to present myself in a way because I want to convince myself I'm okay. You know, that's a lot of work, is to try to convince myself that I'm okay. But I didn't want to be a victim. I did not want to be a freaking victim, I swear. So, you know, I kind of talk about that because I know people that still grown-ass adults who play victim. I, for some reason, God saved me from my childhood because I didn't die at the hands of my mother. And for some reason, I didn't die when we had drive-by shootings. I didn't die when I was drinking and driving, you know? And I didn't kill anybody, thank God. So Alcoholics Anonymous introduced me to a God that I grew up believing was a punishing God. Punishing, because my mom used to say, Dios te va a castigar. God's going to punish you. Uh-oh, did I just give somebody trauma? We have a loving God. Well, but she used to say that. That's how they power tripped. You know, that's how they kept us trying to keep us in control. Dios te va a castigar. You know, and so I grew up with this punishing God. But that's not the way it is. You know, the perspective changes in Alcoholics Anonymous because you get introduced to this way of living life that you get the freedom of picking a God of your choice. You know, who is your higher power? To me, when I talk to people who are not AA related or some people that don't believe in God, because you can kind of get a vibe when you're talking to people like that. And when I say, well, throw it up to the universe. That's what I say. Throw it up to the universe and see how it comes back to you. Because in my way, that's what I do. I throw it up to God and ask him. I ask him to give it to me how I need to have it or show me what it is I need to do. Help me to be brave. I started using words this last year that I'd never even used before. And that's one of them is help me to be brave. But that's another thing that I've learned. Again, when I admit my wrongs, it makes it so much easier. The secrets, I heard early in AA, your secrets will get you out. They'll take you out. Your secrets will take you out. When I see people come in and go out, I'm like, what didn't they talk about? Like, what are they hiding? That's where my thoughts go when I see somebody go out and come back. I'm one of those people, as honest as God is my witness, I'm one of those people that when people go out and come back, they go out and come back. Some people, believe it or not, some people in here will judge you. But I look at it like, damn, they're not done. Like, what are they not talking about? What are they still trying to hide? Like, if they would just let it go, you know, because it's keeping them in that bondage of just, oh, let me drink it away. Let me try to drink it away. And I know there are some people like, don't they just get it? Are they not going to just get it? And I'm like, dude, I don't know about you guys, but at the end of my drinking, it was not a freaking party. It was not a party. It was a maintenance plan. It was a maintenance plan, and I needed to have enough alcohol. And what time is it? Do I need to go get more cigarettes? Am I going to have enough alcohol to drink until this time? I only have 3 cigarettes left. I better go get more cigarettes. While I'm there, let me go ahead and get, you know, that shit, you know, beat the clock. And doing that kind of stuff, it's not a party. Like, the party was over like a long time ago. You know, let's do the Aquanet, spray the hair, smoke a cigarette, get ready to go dance. I don't know how I didn't fucking blow up, you know, Aquanet smoking, you know, Aquanet and smoking, no bueno. But who cares? Throw on the music, the old freestyle music, and just get ready. And you got to get like halfway drunk so when you get there, you don't have to spend a lot of money. You know? So you kind of get the buzz going, and then you get there and you're like, oh yeah. And as soon as you get in there and the music's just bumping and you feel the vibe in your chest, and it's like, ah, you know, I'm with my people. That's kind of the feeling I get when I come into AA, because as you and Matt, Candy and Matt were just chit-chatting and laughing earlier that they just recently met. And what's funny is we don't need to know each other for a long time. We don't. I could just meet you and start talking to you and start laughing with you. And I didn't come from that. I came where people laugh at you, not with you, you know, and that's a huge difference. And it's not shameful. You know, and this language of the heart that we get to share, that's so amazing. And again, for anybody who's new or fairly new and who doesn't understand this, you will end up growing within a family that you weren't born into, which is okay. Because the good thing is here that you end up getting people that want to support you and lift you up, because that's what I have. And I've learned in my 13.11 years that not everybody will do that. Alcoholics Anonymous is a room filled of sick people, some trying to get better and some not working on getting better. And I believe some are just here for a social life. And I shit you not, because I believe I've seen that. They're not alcoholics. I think they're just here to have a social life. Let me go to Alcoholics Anonymous so I can make some friends. We are all kinds of people in here. We're interesting people, you know. And what I was so grateful for in the beginning, once I got past that room full of white people, was that I realized color doesn't matter. That was huge for me because my mom was extremely prejudiced. And so for me to be able to talk to people and not care about what they look like, that was huge. And for me, that was one of those, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Because to me, that was opening my eyes to something different, a different way of life, a different way of seeing people. Another thing was that it did, what I started to learn was Just because you grew up with a mom and a dad in a nice house, or I grew up with a mom on welfare with 9 siblings in the projects, or whatever. Before, I used to think, well, you don't know anything about me because you grew up in a nice neighborhood. I learned here, it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't. Whether you were born with a silver spoon up your ass, a plastic spoon, what do they call that thing in jail? A spork, whatever that is. Frickin' chopsticks, whatever you grew up with. That all gets pulled out when you get to AA, because we're all on the same page. If you're anything like I was, desperate, freaking hopeless, God didn't kill me, God, I woke up again. If you're anything like that, that was the kind of feelings that I had, that I realized that got taken away when I seen other people that were truly just here struggling, crying, angry, just to try to stay sober another day. And for me, my drinking, I could not go 24 hours. And I just shared a picture with my friend Juan over here the other day when I was thinking of going to the conference in Canada. I went to the sheriff's office to get my mugshot, my report. I have one DUI, and I wanted to go see my record to see if I could get my passport approved to go to Canada for that convention. And damn, have you guys looked at your old pictures? Anybody with sobriety? Does anybody have a mugshot? Because it was pretty scary. I had a mugshot from when I got my DUI. And then 9 months later, I got a mugshot 1 week before I got sober. That DUI, I never did my community service. I felt I didn't need to do it. That was like below me. And I thought I was classier drinking in my kitchen and smoking in my restroom, blowing it out the window out of a sippy cup because I didn't want to spill mine. Because when I pass out drinking, I thought my life was better than doing community service. But they did a warrant sweep, and they ended up coming and getting me. And I had just served myself breakfast in a cup. And I had, like, all this alcohol that I was prepared to drink. I wanted to drink myself to death. I just got let go. I got let go from my job on Friday. I went and cashed that check and bought all kinds of alcohol. And then they came and got me Saturday morning. And then I got out Tuesday morning. And I came home to finish drinking on a mission to kill myself. And Saturday, 4 days later, I went up to my kitchen sink to get some water because at that point I was just smoking and drinking and I couldn't swallow. I wasn't even eating. And I remember that up to that moment, I didn't really think alcohol was my problem. I thought I was fucking loony toony. I really thought I was going crazy. Like, why can't I stop this? Why do I keep doing this? All the behavior after was, I like what I heard. It's not what you drink or how much you drink. It's what you do when you drink. The person that said that to me or said it out loud in a meeting at Serenity that day hit me to my core, because I know that when I drank that next day, I was ashamed of what I was doing or trying to put pieces together of what I did. Whew, no bueno. My kids weren't talking to me by that time. And my son got tired of hearing me say, I want to kill myself. I live here. They live down in LA. And it's crazy because I would text them and they ended up blocking me. If you guys think you text drunk and they don't know it, they know it, because I was texting and they knew I was drunk. So I think you slur when you text. And then they had to block me. When you read it, it's probably blah, 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 you know? And so they blocked me and they wouldn't take my calls anymore. And so there I was at the kitchen sink. And when I went to get the cup of water, I guess, God is my witness, that moment was my hand shaking so bad I couldn't hold the cup to my mouth. I swear, that to me was that, many people hear this, but this is how it happened for me. I just said, God, I can't do this anymore. Please help me. Now, I'll go back just a little bit. I got to the Central Coast here, the way of another hymn, and I didn't even know the Central Coast was here. I'm from LA. The beaches I went to was Redondo, Santa Monica. When I did a geographic after divorcing my husband of 17 years, I moved to Tulare, because it's so peaceful over there. I moved to Tulare, and that's where I met this guy, and he introduced me to this area. But I say this part of the story because, you know, that guy, we used to drink. We drank, and we had fun, and he played the guitar, and he sang Elvis. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm in love. Let's get married. And I skipped the part that he was husband number 4. But at the end of my drinking, I was like a happy person. Like, I'm always a happy person. I'm not violent. I'm not. If a fight breaks out, I'm gone. Like, I'm gone. I'll call 911 for you, but I'm gone. Because I just, this craziness just, it takes me to childhood. You know, that that angst. But I turned into a banshee at the end of my drinking. I turned into a banshee. I turned into a freaking witch on a broomstick. I tried to kill that guy I don't know how many times. I am so thankful that I don't know how to throw, and he was a lot faster than me. because I chased him with a knife, like almost all the time we drank. And the pendejo stayed. So I got to be nice. I did make my amends to him. He said, it's okay, Anna. You're nice when you're not drinking. But I did. Like, I'd get this rage, like, see red, like, immediately. And all of a sudden, all this stuff would come up, and I'd start telling him stuff, and I'd start chasing him with a knife. And we never got deposits back from the apartments we had because there were so many knife marks in the door. I got my broken elbow. I was chasing him outside. We lived on Elm Street in Aurora Grande in the Elm Street apartment, so it's a big complex. Mm-hmm. And it was about 5 o'clock in the evening, if you guys heard my underwear story. So I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, my arm, you know, it's all swollen. He's like, you don't remember what you did? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, you were chasing me outside with a knife in the parking lot, 5 o'clock in the evening, in your underwear. And I'm like, I look down because I want to know what underwear I have on. And I didn't believe him, but I'm holding, you know, my arm is like swollen up to here. And it turned out I broke it. I fell on a railroad, one of those rail ties, the wooden thing. I fell and broke it. So there's my little scar right there that I remember that man. But it's crazy because at the end of my drinking, I was doing shit and I thought I was going crazy. And when people, like my neighbors downstairs, would come upstairs and ask me, Anna, how are you today? And I said, I'm doing good. Why? I have a glass of wine in my hand already. Because you fell down the stairs yesterday. I'm like, what? And my stairs, it was like stairs, platform, stairs. What the fuck did I go all the way down there? So she said, no, I was cooking in the kitchen and I just heard a flop. And I went outside and you were like, so me and my husband took you upstairs and threw you in your apartment. And I'm like, I'm okay. And she walked, you know, I closed the door and I'm like, why is she lying? Like, I really thought people were lying and I was going crazy. I didn't have any bruises. I'm like, what the fuck? Well, that happened a few times. Those neighbors did not like me. That's why I started smoking in my restroom and blowing the smoke outside, because it was a smoking apartment. And if I sat at the top of the stairs smoking, you know, I don't know if any of you guys do this or did. I hope you're not doing it now. But I'd sit at the top of the stairs just freaking ready to pass out, and I'd roll down the stairs. And I never broke anything in that process. But I, you know, I guess there's some truth in how limber we get when we're drunk. But anywho, that guy ended up leaving me, and for his own safety, thank God. I felt like I could drink the way I wanted to when he was gone. And I don't know about you guys, but I moved here from another place, so I didn't have friends here. But I tell you, I was hiding my alcohol from who? ¿Quién sabe? Me. Because when I moved out of that apartment, I found out where all my knives were. They were way up on the cabinet that I couldn't reach. And then I found alcohol just hidden around my apartment. Like, what kind of crazy person does that? You know? But he ended up leaving. But that day that I surrendered at my kitchen sink, he was the first person I called. And I just said, Jared, I can't do this anymore. And he said, I'll take you some food. And I said, okay. And he brought me food. I took a shower. He brought me some food. We sat on the floor and we talked. And the next day is when I went into serenity. And I'm telling you, I'm so grateful that I could speak of my childhood and the trauma that happened, because it happens to a lot of people. What I share in that story is not for pity or to be a victim or, you know, anything like that. I share those messages because I want to give hope. I want to offer hope to people that come from any kind of shit. You know, I get to have a relationship with my kids that mean the world to me. And I'm telling you, whether it's drugs or alcohol, when you get to the end of your point, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. And I never thought that I would put my kids on the back burner. I have my son Anthony's 43. I believe he's one of us. My daughter Jessica's 42, and my Frankie is 38, and my Brandy's 31. And I have 7 grandkids. I have 3, 4, 5, 7, 9, just turned 12, and 18. And the 18-year-old, she was like 2. The rest of them never seen me drink. And what's super awesome is that every year I get to get tighter to my kids. If there's anybody here who feels like they'll never be able to make an amends or mend a relationship, because those seem to be the most painful part of our wreckage as family of some way, shape, or form, I am definitely an example of the fact that working this program and not seeking promotion and looking toward attraction, you know, I was told that early on. It's not something for me to go tell my kids, I haven't drank in 2 months. Why aren't you talking to me? You know, I learned here that I needed to just be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous working through me, having a God in my life that works through me, having a program and people that teach me how to love me. I didn't start really loving me till about like 3 years ago. And it's kind of interesting because I grew up wanting to such a people pleaser that are you happy? I could be happy. You're mad? Shit, what did I do? How can I make it better? That was my cycle of life. And it was really crazy and exhausting. And I learned here that I don't need to do that. What I learned is I needed to start living my life from the inside out. Because I don't need you all to be happy. I need to be happy. So my happiness was based off of everybody else around me. So when I come to learn that years ago, I was like, yes, because that was a lot of work. You know, I need to learn to be happy from the inside out. And that's what truly shines on people. And I think that's the attraction that people see. And I like to try to be a good example of a good example and an example of a bad example, because I'm not perfect. What I learned, I have a friend that he's a brother from another mother. And he's probably the only man I lived with for 3 years that I didn't have sex with. Because he's my brother from another mother. In the program, I met him, and he's my closest friend. He's one of my six that I will trust with my life. But I remember asking him when I first came in, he had a few months ahead of me, and I asked him, who can I trust in here? He says, I can't tell you that, Anna. You need to pay attention to yourself. And I'm like, just tell me who I could trust in here. I won't talk to him. He says, no, I can't do that. Do you know, to this day, I'm still learning, who can I trust? I'm still learning who to allow in my circle. I'm still learning who really cares and who doesn't. Who's in my life for gossip? Who's in my life to support me? I'm still learning. And you know what? It's okay, because I don't hate on the people that are haters. I let them be who they are, because program also taught me I can't change people, places, and things. So for me to waste my energy on people who want to live that way, my realization is that some people like to be miserable. My mom did. At least I thought that's what she liked. But I do. I feel some people just want to sit in their misery. Other people want to get to work. I want to have relief, so I'm going to get into work. And if I have something that gets me all twisted up at work or anywhere else, I want to get to work on finding out what's inside of me that's making that happen. Because the programs introduced me to a way of doing that kind of shit. I didn't grow up with the skills to do that. Wouldn't even think of it. And this is what's super amazing, is because a room of alcoholics are the ones who taught me how to start doing that. Like processing, halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. That goes, I see my grandkids, I swear, when I see my daughter-in-law, do you need a snack? Do you need a timeout? I'm like, she's telling my grandkids, but I'm looking like, yeah, I need a snack. You know, because that's what we need to do. We need to check in with ourselves. It's not your job to check in on me. It's me to check in with me, like, what am I feeling right now? Maybe I do need a nap. Or, you know, and I laugh at myself sometimes when all I needed was a snack. Go downstairs and get a snack. Oh, I feel better now. You know, halt, angry. Angry, what is it? I already forgot. Thank you. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Yeah, that was one of the early ones that I learned that I really liked, because it reminds us of little kids. Kind of like the program too. Be respectful, be kind, be compassionate. Like they teach you in kindergarten, you know, keep your hands to yourself. You know, be nice, share, you know. Some of us still don't like to share. But it's funny how it takes us back to those things. I have a sponsee right now. I do have a sponsor, by the way. Her name is Susie S., and she has 46 years of sobriety, and I love her to smithereens. She's a white lady. She was raised in El Monte, but she used to be a big-time thumper. And I look at her, and I'm like, we come in all kinds of shapes and colors, you know? But I like her because she doesn't boo-boo kitty me. And I've had her for, I think, about 7 years now, 7, 8 years I've had her. But she doesn't boo-boo kitty me or sign off on any of my shit, and sometimes that pisses me off, because sometimes I just want you to sign off on my shit. But what she tells me is, Anna, I know you don't like me right now, but that's okay. I don't need you to like me right now, but I need you to say what I need to say. I give her one of those fake hugs, bye, you know, when you just kind of do this, you know, thank you for your time. And I go get in my car and I put on my seatbelt. And just before I turn the corner, I'm like, fuck, she was right. Damn, text her. Thank you for your time. I love you. But that's what's super cool. We don't always have to freaking be happy or happy with what we hear, because if I'm not happy with what I hear, there's probably some truth to it. And then I want to get down to the bottom of that. I think one of my downfalls, or one of my not so good things, is that sometimes I want my God to, I know there's a lesson. Can we speed it up? Because I'm hurting right now. I have this, that's how I talk to my God. God, please, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And I'll even look up at the sky. I've been in my car at a stop sign and look up my windshield. I mean, I just want to make eye contact with him. But that's how I learned to pray in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because before that, I only knew how to pray like they did it at Catholic churches. Funerals. I went to a lot of funerals. Hail Mary, Our Father. That is probably why I don't typically like to say the Our Father at the end of a meeting, because to me it's associated with Catholics, you know, the church, which, again, I hope you guys are staying with me, because I go here, there, and everywhere. That's just me, and I swear I'm not on coke. But you know, the Catholic Church, what I learned here, because, you know, religion was no bueno. It was very punishing. And so what I learned in here is it's a spiritual program, not a religious program. And the difference is religion is man-made. Spirituality is faith-based. It's what you believe. It's what you learn to believe in here, you know. And so I have this thing that I believe in. It's one thing to believe in God. It's another to rely on God. Huge. You could say, I believe in God. But you keep taking everything back from him because you want results as quick as right now. Right now, I don't want this pain. But let me tell you a secret of mine. I know that when there's pain, there's going to be a big growth. I know when there's pain, God's going to catapult me into another area of my life. He is. And he hasn't let me down. And even saying that right now just gives me chills because that's how much I trust my God. Because nothing up to this point has saved my ass or my crazy thinking before I got introduced to this God. A compassionate, loving God, a forgiving God, a God who wants to see me succeed, a God who puts good people in my life, a God who puts bad people in my life. Because again, there's always a lesson if I'm opening my eyes and wanting to learn. Open-minded, teachable. I heard that early on. I was going to say, I work with the sponsee I have. She has 8 years sobriety. We worked the steps. We did all that good stuff. But what I really appreciate is she was put in my life about 3 years ago. She was put in my life about the time that I wanted to start reading more literature. Like the big book wasn't enough. I need to know more about Alcoholics Anonymous. She was feeling the same vibe. So we started reading other literature. You know, Carl Jung and AA, Our Great Responsibility. We just finished AA Comes of Age. We're going to go into Marty Mann. I don't know if you guys know who Marty Mann is. Marty Mann is the first woman in the first 100 of the group of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was the first woman who had long-term sobriety and died sober. Marty Mann. She actually ended up working up in headquarters. But she's the first woman in Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sober until she died. And so we're starting that book next, which is about that Vic. From somebody who used to like read People magazines, now I'm reading books like, oh my God, that's kind of like thick. But there's some other literature that we've read, which I find it fascinating because what they needed to do to put this program together was absolutely phenomenal. I don't know about you guys, but I've been in some crazy business meetings. And for a group of alcoholics that had like a year, months, Bill had 2 years, to come together and put this stuff together to make a book because they needed to get this message out there. All they had at the time in the early days was passing out grapevines. That was it. When Bill, it was like, we need to put something in a book. We need to get a book together. You know, and I don't know if you guys know about the book, the big book, but they purposely picked thick paper because they wanted the book to look schmancy and thick. That's why they call it the big book. But they didn't use regular paper, so they got the thicker paper to make it look big. But you know, that book right there was only in the very beginning. I encourage everybody to be curious. I encourage you to be curious to see how this program came together because with that, it gave me a whole different light about what it took to do this. Like how do alcoholics come together to make a decision? When you read the books like Our Great Responsibility or some of the other books that I've read, you start to understand how much they had to work together. Like this is a program, a team. This is a group effort. This is not, you know, I could do this. It really is a we. It's a we. And when you read how they worked together, they argued like crazy. And Bill was a crazy man. He was a crazy man. He was very passionate and very businesslike and very smart, but he was an alcoholic, you know, and he always had these great ideas, but then he'd go drink again, you know, and it's kind of interesting to see how he finally got sober that one time and had this passion that he needed to share this with other people who suffered. Other people who were suffering who couldn't stop. Now, for us people, I say primarily ladies, they put them away. Like when ladies like went through menopause, they put them in the Looney Tune bin, you know? Then they just did away with this. Let me go get another young wife to take care of all these kids and have some more kids. But women were kind of just thrown away. And alcoholic women, they were like crazy. You didn't hear about many alcoholic women. You know, that's why I'm really excited to read the Marty Mann deal to hear her story and what she had to go through in those beginning days with a room primarily of men. So, but alcoholics, again, come in all shapes, sizes, and forms. And I didn't mention that you know, growing up in that crazy house and doing the foster homes and all that stuff, the really super cool part about that is I don't have to live in that. The really super cool part is that I come to realize that I needed to tell myself a new story. I don't know about you guys, but I am my worst enemy, and whatever I tell myself, I will believe it, and you cannot convince me otherwise. I used to argue with people who gave me compliments when I first came in the program, and I'd argue with them. I didn't know how to take a compliment until somebody just say, thank you, Anna. It doesn't matter if you believe it or not, just say thank you. Like, they taught me these manners. I didn't come in a freaking monkey or anything, but I mean, you know, I didn't know how to be amongst people, you know, and that's where I learned to grow up. I kind of identify myself when I was 2 years sober. I identified myself with a toddler. You have kids or grandkids. If you chase around a two-year-old, you know, if you tell them I need to change your diaper, they run. They just run, and their diaper's all sagging, but they're all happy, and they want you to chase them, and they're so excited. That's how I saw myself at 2 years. I saw myself as that little kid. They get put in the back seat in the car seat, and they don't know where they're going. They don't even care who's driving. They're just going somewhere, and they're so happy. That's how I see myself in Alcoholics Anonymous, in sobriety. I see myself, that little me, and the me who I get to be today. And that's part of self-love. When I stopped talking to myself in a negative way is when I started understanding that those were forms of self-love. Like, why are you even, like, I work at Cuesta, and some years back I got inspired to go after my associate's degree because all I had was a high school diploma. I was a pregnant teen. I got pregnant at 16. I had my Anthony and my Jessica in high school, but I did graduate because my mom said, yo sabía que ibas a salir embarazada y que ta, 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 ta. I knew you were gonna get pregnant, you're gonna drop out of school. And her negativity turned my mind around and made me say, oh. I went to night school, day school, and Saturday school, and I crossed that stage, and I swear I wanted to get the microphone. If I would have been more vocal then, like I am now, I would have made a huge speech. I did this with two kids. But she motivated me. Her negativity motivated me. And I did get married to that husband, and we divorced by the time I was 18. You know, what did we know? You know, I had two kids and I was divorced, and then I met the second husband, and we were married 17 years, and I had two more kids. And, you know, I love the fact, like I said, my kids are my life. What I've gotten to do in the program besides start talking positive to myself, I like to say this to you all because what we say in our head, I said I needed to stop playing the cassette because I'm a cassette era. I don't know what you guys are. CD, MP3 player, A-track. Who's an A-track? You're an A-track? Vinyl? Any vinyls in here? Okay. I'm a cassette. So what I needed to start telling myself, because my family calls me Marianne. So if you call me Marianne, I'll be like, how do I know you? But I had to start telling myself, stop playing that song over and over again. Play a different song. When I'm telling myself the same stories, I had to realize, like, how much of that story is even true anymore? Like that little game telephone, you know, the kids play. You tell a secret, and by the time it comes all the way around, the whole story's changed. So I came to that realization, like, how much is the story I'm telling myself true? I don't know. And again, what I feel is very rewarding and kind and loving is the fact that I could say, I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. And to me, that has been the most freeing thing in this whole time that I've been sober. The more I keep moving along and the more I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't have the answer. I could find the answer. I'll help you. Those kinds of things is how I get to speak and how I get to live today. And so I don't play the same cassette over. I play different music. I play more of what I get to have today. What did I learn from that experience? Who can I help today? Oh my God, my kids are, you know, my kids want they just planned a Mother's Day camping in Ventura at the KOA that I've been telling them let's go to for like years. And they finally told me we're doing Mother's Day there. I'm like, okay, slowly by slowly. It doesn't happen overnight. I did get to start traveling in sobriety, which is something I never thought I'd do. My son had a destination wedding, which, you know, he wanted me to be there. Thank you, God. So I needed to get a passport, which, again, I thought I'd never need because I'm Mexican and we don't travel. It's something you see in a magazine while you're waiting in the doctor's office. Like, ooh, look at all these traveling places. So I did get to go to Cabo. And my son's so funny because, you know, we don't think our kids remember stuff. Like, they only remember the bad stuff. But I don't know if you guys have ever heard the song Sweet Fantasy. It's a crazy song. Freestyle. My son says he wanted to pick the mother son dance. And he picked that damn song, and I had just twisted my ankle. But the song started playing, and all I heard was the beat. And I swear I started to cry because I thought he was kidding. He said, no, Mom. And I said, mijo, why did you pick that song? He goes, because when I was little, I remember you'd always dance so happy to that song. And I just, like, that's the kind of stuff that I would have missed. And I was dancing, and they videotaped it, and I could hear my sister-in-law, my ex-sister-in-law's, I could hear them like, didn't Marianne know that song was coming on? Because they all knew as soon as that song came on, Marianne was always on the dance floor. And so Mijo picked this song as the son mom danced. And I could hear them laughing like, she didn't know, Marianne didn't know. And they're like, no, she didn't know, you know, da 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 da. It was amazing. It was an amazing experience to be there, to be sober and to be there for my son and to watch them be happy. They drank 5 days. I don't think my nephews ever left the pool. I think they peed in that pool. because they would swim up to the bar and swim back, and they had sunburn. They were gnarly. I ain't getting in that pool because I never seen my nephews. I never seen them leave the goddamn pool. But you know, I've gotten to do some other traveling. I got to go to London. I got to go to Paris. I've gotten to go to Virginia and some other places. New York. I went to New York. What was really cool a few years ago, I was going to New York for the first time, and Pink was playing at the SoFi, and I was flying out of LAX. I'm like, she's on my bucket list, because I have a bucket list. And so I got to go see Pink perform, and the very next day fly out to go to New York. And that was again, an amazing experience. And I recently just did, for Christmas, I did a solo trip. I did a solo trip, and believe it or not, I'm 60, but I'm a scaredy cat. But it's on my bucket list. And so I randomly Googled, you know, places to go for 60-year-old women who are single somewhere in the United States that's not too cold. And it popped up. It did. It popped up like all these places. I'm like, oh, shit, okay. And I ended up picking up Santa Fe, New Mexico, because culture, tradition, and colorful. And I'm like, I'm going there. So 5 days. And I made the decision quick, and I booked the ticket so I couldn't chicken out. And so, but you know, that trip was super cool, because what I didn't realize was the very next day after I booked that trip, I was thinking about, why, I can't believe I did it. I booked the trip. I booked the air flight. And it dawned on me, my mom was from New Mexico. So, you know, it was crazy. I'm like, God or my mom? I mentioned my mom and that we have a really good relationship. We have a super good relationship today. My mom died in 2006, and I got sober in 2012. The relationship that I get to have with my mom today is because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and a God that I have in my life. Because what I learned, I shit you not, I was at a stop sign or a stoplight. I don't remember that part exactly, but I was stopped in my car, and I'm like, oh my God, my mom was an alcoholic. Shit, she didn't have AA. Oh my God, she didn't have a felt. Oh, and I got overwhelmed with all these emotions and these memories of my mom, because I was able to identify at that very moment. My mom was scared. That's why she tried to be so tough. She was alone. She drank. She had all these kids that she tried to take care of. She did really do the best that she could, because when they told me on my fourth step, I said, when I tried, before I did the fourth step, I wish I knew who I told it to. I said, if you can convince me my mom loved me, I'll do whatever you guys tell me to. You know, and of course that didn't happen, because AA is not a shortcut. Nothing is done quickly. You have to go through stuff. But that's what I realized right then and there. I had this compassion for my mom that I had never knew in my freaking life. I thought this woman hated me. She didn't hate me. She just didn't know how to love me. She didn't know how to show me that love. And what's crazy about that is I had been praying for God to help me get connected with my 42-year-old daughter, because Jessica and I bump heads. And my Jessica, I'm like, she's just like her Nana. She's just like my mom. She's just like Nana. And then I had a woohoo moment where I'm like, she's like me and my mom. Oh my God. You know, these gunshot moments, you know. But those moments give me some clarity. They give me some relief. Like, oh, okay, she's like me and my mom. Okay. My mom didn't know how to show me love. Okay, I need to show Jessica love. That's what I need to do. I need to show Jessica love. You know, this is how this all comes together. Here I'm praying for my Jessica and me. And then woohoo, I have a me and my mom moment. Like crazy. But I'm grateful, because today, when I went to New Mexico, I kid you not, I think I was there 2 days, and I messaged my kids, and I said, I feel like every meal I've had here was made by my mom. I said, Nana. I said, I feel every meal I've had here so far in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Nana made it for me, especially the tortillas. And I was like, and I had this calmness on me, because when I travel, I put all the furniture against the door so nobody comes in to kill me. When I travel alone, I put all the furniture. My friend gave me this wedge that you put on the door, and it screams if anybody tries to open it. But I'm not kidding you. That first night in Santa Fe, New Mexico, I had no fear. I was so chilled and relaxed. That bed was really comfortable too. But internal, that's another thing. It's not the external comforts. It's the internal comforts. I love that I know without a doubt that if I'm not happy there, I will not be happy there. I hear so many people, when I get there, I'll be happy. Chale, tamale, time's being wasted. It's right here that matters, being in the here and now that matters. So I like to, you know, I get to have my kids in my life. You know, I went to Santa Fe for Christmas. I flew out of Ontario because my son lives by there. And I came home Christmas night. And I told my son, planes landed, come get me. Platform full of people. I'm in Terminal 4, all these people, Christmas evening, wanting to get somewhere. And I'm looking for my son's truck, and there's cars lined up, Ubers, just packed. And I hear this little car coming from a distance, just bumping some stupid-ass rap song. And I'm like, pinchy hoodlums, who are they? I'm being all nosy, senora right there. Like, who's coming in a freaking bumping the sound, and then I see this Grinch hanging out the window. I'm like, God, I hope they don't shoot me. And I'm standing there like, where's my son? And so then all of a sudden, Grinch gets out of the car. Grinch is running around the platform. People are laughing, all these adults, and Grinch is running around. Grinch comes and grabs my suitcase. I'm like, what the fuck? And I turn and I look, and I see my older son, Anthony. And then my son, Frankie, said, it's me, Mom. And I'm just like, oh, my God. And I turn and they're my sons. They're my sons. It's okay. They're my sons. In my head, I'm like, they're not hoodlums. So my son puts it, and they're laughing. And my relationship with my Anthony has been very long and very hard. And our relationship just started coming together a year ago. And so things don't happen quickly here. But if you leave before the miracle, you're going to miss it. You know, my sons took me home, and my Anthony, he's what I think is one of us, but I don't ever judge him. I love him. I just love him when I'm there. I have 3.5 hours to pray before I get over there. God, help me be present. I don't want to steal any more of my kids' times. I don't want to steal any time from my kids. I want to be available for them because I was never available for them emotionally. So that's my focus. When I go down there, what do you need? My grandboys, my grandkids want to hang up on me and hold me and love me and all that good stuff, and I just embrace it all. But the boys, my Anthony says, Mom, you want chili cheese fries for dinner or you want filet mignon? And I'm like, whatever's easiest, because I'm chill, whatever you guys got going on. And my son Anthony, Mom, do you want chili cheese fries or you want filet mignon? And I'm like, okay, my Frankie is the barbecuer. So Frankie cooks up the filet mignon, and he has this nice setting, asparagus, filet mignon, all this. Just like, I'm just like, oh, just got home from my first solo trip. The Grinch picked me up. I'm feeling high, because 14 years ago at Christmas time, I was a hot mess. And they fixed me my plate, and I'm like, you know, guys, 14 years ago, I couldn't imagine. I was a hot mess 14 years ago. And they're like, my son, Frankie the Grinch. He's like, yeah, I know, Mom. And I lean on the table, and I lean forward. No, I'm telling you, 14 years ago, I was sick. I was a drunk. I was a lush. And my son, Frankie the Grinch, says, yeah, we know, Mom. I'm like, okay. We started laughing. And that's what you get to get when you stay here, is that what used to shame you and hurt you and you couldn't talk about and you're afraid somebody's going to hit you up and say, I remember when you say, yeah, I did. Yeah, I was. Yeah, that's not me today. That's what gives me the peace of knowing that I can be present and I can receive love, because I'll end with this. I was told in order to be a good giver, you need to be a better receiver. In order to be a good giver, you need to be a better receiver. And that's what I continue to learn in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, guys.